Today is May 18th, 2009, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 149, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, fact checker. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. You know, what's funny, Jeff? Last week in the introduction, I think I said shoot us a note at awr.com.
You may have, which...
No, I did.
Okay, so that means we have to go out and buy another domain, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, because I'm sure that a three-letter domain is available for us, awr.com. Anyway, thanks to the readers who wrote in to let us know that I said that, and sorry I didn't catch that in editing.
Whoops. And I guess this also means that tomorrow morning I have the unsavory job of firing our current fact checker, since you've decided to take over that job now.
Yeah, Thomas Stafford is going to be up for another demotion. Sorry, Tommy boy.
You know, and he's such a nice guy, too.
He is. He just... I don't know about that, Thomas.
Yeah.
So in the meanwhile, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I invite you to. I am at TMO Brian, so that's twitter.com/TMOBRYAN.
And I invite you to follow Brian as well. And if you want, you can follow me too. I'm J Gamet. That's JGAMET. And yeah, you can see what kind of weird little things spout from my head and right out to the interwebs.
You know, we're recording this a little bit later, and by a little bit, I mean a lot later than we normally do in the day, because my FireWire 410 from M-Audio stopped working. So I ran up to Guitar Center to get another audio interface, and unfortunately, all they had was the M-Audio line. By the way, I'm meeting with the folks at Avid that now control all the PR for Digi and M-Audio.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to make sure she listens to this first.
Okay.
And I'm meeting with them in sometime in June, I think.
You know, maybe you might want to make them wait to listen to this until after you have your meeting, just so that...
No. I want them to know going into it.
Okay. I was just afraid that maybe they'd call you back and say, you know what, don't come out.
Maybe. But I have a new M-Audio Fast Track Pro. And the funny thing is that iChat doesn't recognize it, but I don't really think that that's M-Audio's fault.
Yeah, that's a weird one. And I'm questioning whether or not iChat is using some different way to look to the audio sources than everything else that Apple wrote.
Yeah, it could be. It's a weird one. But so thank you to Jeff for taking one for the team and staying up way past his bedtime to record this tonight.
You know, for you, I don't mind. And since it's an audio podcast and not video, that makes it a little bit better, because we know how desperately I need my beauty sleep.
You and me both, brother. Well, let's get to it.
Okay. Apple's Lawsuit Express is picking up steam, while SciStar is still shoveling in the coal and topping off the water. And Tune Hunter is hoping to tag along for a fun ride. AT&T and Verizon are swapping customers. Apple hired a security pro. The iPhone 3G is finally available online. Jobs wins this old house battle. Microsoft fills an iPod with new math. Napster sets its sights low. Phil Schiller is delivering the WWDC keynote. And a psychic predicts the return of Steve Jobs.
SciStar's legal battle to sell Mac clones without Apple's permission doesn't appear to be going too well, as evidenced by Judge, is it Stuart Alsup?
I believe it is Stuart.
His order on May 11th compelling the company to produce business documents for Apple by May 18th. The order comes after SciStar failed to adequately respond to discovery depositions in Apple's lawsuit to block the sale of unauthorized Mac clones. Thanks to the judge's order, SciStar has until May 18th to produce the requested financial documents. That, by the way, was earlier today. and until June 3rd to provide someone to testify about the company's records. The order for someone to testify follows SciStar CEO Rudy Pedreza's inability to answer basic questions about his own company's finances. Analysts have speculated that there are other companies funding SciStar's legal defense, since the little PC maker isn't likely to have enough money to keep this case going. If that's actually the case, if you'll pardon the two cases, the financial documents Apple is requesting may help show who those backers are.
And several companies, including Apple, AT&T, the mighty Napster, and Gracenote, have found themselves on the receiving end of a patent infringement suit launched by the wildly popular Tune Hunter. And by wildly popular, we mean the company no one has heard of. The suit alleges that the named companies have all infringed on Tune Hunter patents describing a way to use an electronic device to listen to and then identify songs, much like the Shazam application that's available for the iPhone and several other smartphones. Tune Hunter claimed that the companies named in the lawsuit have been involved in violating its patent portfolio by either developing applications without first gaining permission to use the process in its patents or by helping to distribute those applications. The company filed its suit in U.S. District Court in Marshall, Texas, which is well known for favoring plaintiffs in patent infringement cases. It is asking the court to compel the companies it named to stop infringing on its patents, and it also wants damages and compensation for legal expenses.
AT&T and Verizon struck a deal worth $2.35 billion U.S. that gives AT&T an additional 1.5 million subscribers across 18 states. The deal helps Verizon comply with regulatory requirements linked to its purchase of rival cell carrier Alltel. The agreement turns over Alltel licenses and network gear in 79 service regions, mostly from rural areas, extending AT&T's coverage into places where it's had weak or no service availability. AT&T said the subscribers it gets as part of the deal will be able to take advantage of the same services existing customers have, such as 3D coverage and AT&T Wi-Fi hotspots, which are, of course, wildly popular in rural areas.
So I've heard.
Yeah. That might, however, take a little time, since AT&T will have to deal with converting Verizon's CMDA gear to its own GSM technology. Both companies are awaiting regulatory approval before closing the deal and anticipate wrapping up the transaction before the end of 2009.
Apple's talent harvest is still in full swing, and this time with the hiring of Ivan Gristic, former director of security and architecture for the One Laptop Per Child program, and no relation to Mr. Mixelplix. Mr. Gristic will apparently use his expertise to help harden Mac OS X against potential hacker attacks. And for those that aren't familiar with Mr. Gristic, he developed the Bitfrost system for the OLPC as a way to protect against malware attacks. Bitfrost isolates each application and its data, preventing malware from stealing data or spying on user activities. Now, if he designs a similar system for Mac OS X, he could potentially turn the Mac into a platform that has no need for virus protection applications. If so, Mac security application developers would likely have to revamp their utilities or simply drop their Mac products and focus instead on the strong third-party security market for Windows.
Don't worry, folks. That was just the sound of Jeff's backhanded compliment landing with force. Apple has finally started selling the iPhone 3G through its own online store nearly a year after it was introduced, and only weeks before the Worldwide Developers Conference, where many expect the next generation model will be announced. Apple sold the first generation iPhone online, but dropped the practice when the iPhone 3G was released, requiring customers to make their purchase in a retail location. That move caused untold numbers of potential iPhone buyers to wail and gnash their teeth and pull their hair and light their clothes on fire, but didn't seem to have any actual impact on sales, at least not that was noticeable. Adding online sales could be a move to help clear out current inventory before the next iPhone is launched, but whether or not shoppers will be able to buy that version of the iPhone when it is released remains to be seen, unless, of course, you happen to be a psychic.
Apple CEO Steve Jobs won his bid last week to demolish his 17,250 square foot house in Palo Alto, California, in preparation to build a smaller residence on his property. The ruling follows a multi-year battle by preservationists to stop the destruction of what they see as a historic landmark. Uphold Our Heritage successfully stopped the demolition in 2006 after claiming Mr. Jobs and the town failed to produce documentation that showed the house would be more expensive to preserve than to replace. The filing that won town council approval last Tuesday included information detailing that it would cost over $13 million to renovate the property, but only $8.2 million to start over and build a new house. Group President Clotilde Luce didn't say if they plan to sue again, but he did say, quote, "We already sued and we won. I wish the council had paid attention to the law," unquote.
Yeah, I still don't get that one.
No.
Microsoft is extending its message that Apple products are too expensive. Too expensive, we say, by telling iPod owners that they need to spend $30,000 to fill their little music media player thing. The solution they offer is to buy a Zune Pass instead, and by extension a Zune Media Player, and use their music subscription service instead. The ad claims that The ad claims that at $1 a song, it would take about $30,000 to fill a 120 gig iPod with music, but that for a mere $14.95 each and every month, users could have as much music as they want. To add to the credibility of that claim, Microsoft hired financial planner Wes Moss as their pitch man. The ad fails to mention, of course, that users can add music from their own CDs to their iPod for, well, free, more or less, and that if a Zune Music subscriber fails to pay their monthly service fee, they lose that music. Microsoft is at least being consistent, since its Zune Pass offers the same message that its recent Find a Laptop, Keep a Laptop ads, and that is that Microsoft products aren't better. They're just cheaper.
And this day brings yet another new era to the name of Napster, an era where the company reaches further and lower in hopes of achieving true, lasting bottom feeder status.
Yay!
The company announced Monday that it was lowering the price of its subscription service to $5, and that price not only includes unlimited streaming of the company's music library, but 5 DRM-free MP3 downloads playable on any digital media device, including iPods. In other words, Napster is telling the world that its subscription service is worth roughly a nickel a month, because for the same price that you can buy 5 songs on iTunes, assuming they aren't the newly jacked up tracks priced at $1.29, you can get the same 5 tunes at Napster plus unlimited streaming.
The highly anticipated WWDC keynote has at last been announced, but the news that we all inexplicably hoped for was MIA, literally. Apple announced the keynote and said that it would be given by Apple VP Phil Schiller and several other Apple executives, but there was no mention of CEO Steve Jobs. Now, the reality is that Mr. Jobs originally announced he would be on a 6-month leave of absence starting in January, which would be over at the end of June at the earliest, or even in July. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference takes place starting June 8th, almost a month before that 6-month time frame. Still, it seems that the Mac community, and let's be honest, that includes me and Jeff, were hoping for his return at the WWDC, and even the mainstream press made hay from the Schiller announcement. Even now, there is no doubt that most of us are still hoping he'll at least make an appearance on that WWDC stage. In other news, if wishes were horses, Jeff and I would be announcing our new joint venture, the JMB Dude Ranch, for gentlemen riders with discerning taste. Whoa, whoa, whoa there. Whoa, Steve. Whoa, Phil. Easy, boys. Easy. Easy. They're good horses.
They are. They're the best. Oh, my. All right. For those worried about Mr. Jobs and his future at Apple, however, there was some good news this week. It was revealed Monday that Mr. Jobs will be returning to Apple, though not necessarily for good. Furthermore, it was revealed that a new leader would arise in Cupertino, a leader currently obscured by the winds of fate, but who would make himself known in time for Mr. Jobs to depart the company he founded in the dark years of IBM's dominance of computing after only 2 years. Now, unfortunately, the deliverer of this news was Silicon Valley-based psychic Barbara Courtney, who told the Cult of Mac, quote,
"There's some transition, but that won't be announced for a while. I feel that there's another person that won't surface right away,"
unquote. She also added that when he returns to Apple, his titular role may well change, saying, quote,
"I feel he will try to keep his stress lower. He will begin to empower other people to take a more public role,"
unquote. And, well, that's good to know, lady.
This job's too fun.
I just can't believe some of the stories that get laid right into our laps.
Yep. And in the meanwhile, that little bass riff means, that this is the context machine.
You know, and I'm the one that's up past her bedtime. Just keep that in mind. You're the one that can't talk. What's up with that?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. Yeah. So the context machine, that's where Jeff and I get a little more deep into, I just can't do anything. Anyway, we talk about stuff. Context machine. Woohoo, yay.
Yeah, context machine. That's where we talk about stuff that we mentioned already in the show, but most likely will also go off in random tangents.
Probably.
Yes.
Let's talk about Microsoft's ad.
Yeah. All right. You know, when I look at this ad and then put it in context with the Find a Laptop, Keep a Laptop ads, mm-hmm. What I'm seeing is that Microsoft is now sending out a really strong message. And the message is, you don't need to buy the quality product because the cheap product is good enough.
Well, yeah. Actually, you know what? Let's play that ad.
Okay.
People worry about the capacity of their iPod. What about the capacity of their bank account? At a buck a song, they'll run out of money way before they run out of space. It costs $30,000 to fill the latest iPod using iTunes. I don't know about you, but I don't have 30 grand laying around for music. So if someone's using iTunes, I tell them to consider a subscription service like ZunePass. Unlimited music downloads for $14.99 a month. One costs a lot, and one costs a little.
One cost a lot and one cost a little.
Yeah.
That's what they say. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, what that's saying to me, so I've already said part of what that says to me. The other thing that says to me is that Microsoft is letting everyone know that they're not in this industry to make a quality product for their customers. They're just out to make a product that they can sell quickly.
Yeah, I guess it's just really weird to me because they're really reinforcing Apple as the premium brand.
Exactly. And
it's weird.
It is.
It's just weird. It's weird for them to do that job for Apple and I don't know. I don't really get it. I mean, and don't even get me started on the music subscription thing. I mean, you know, I don't want to rent my music. You know, we've talked about this over the years, but the labels are desperate to not have to earn our money, and if they can get us all on subscription systems so that they just get a check every month, it doesn't really matter what they do anymore. And this has been their dream. It's just like Microsoft's dream. Microsoft, right. You remember, it was in the early 2000s where they were really keen on switching all of their people over to subscription-based plans for buying Windows or for renting Windows.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's their dream, too, because, again, it evens out their revenue source. They don't really have to ever worry about making anything good enough for people to actually want to buy, to actually have to sell it to people, because they just get that monthly check and they're good to go. It's what the labels want. It's what Microsoft wants. So it's no surprise that Microsoft is the champion of subscription services all of a sudden.
Right. Okay. Now, I'm going to jump to the other side of the fence for a second, simply because...
Watch the splinters.
Yeah, I know. The last time I did this, you would not believe the chafing I had. All right. So what I'm wondering is if Microsoft and their ad agency decided that this was the road to go down, because the market they're going after would not interpret those ads to be Apple is making a better product, but we're cheap, so go ahead with and buy what we have. Maybe the message that their shoppers are picking up on is that Microsoft makes the right product and Apple charges too much for what they have.
It could be, but if that's the case, how are they getting any new customers out of this? How are they keeping people from going over to Apple?
You know, the only thing that I can see in their message that would keep someone from buying an Apple product would be the whole thing about don't spend that much money. And I know I'm stretching this here, but I'm trying to find where the logic is in the ads that Microsoft's been producing.
I actually think that the Laptop Hunter ads, while delivering a weird mixed message, I think that they're at least compelling. And now this thing with the iPod and the $30,000, I mean, I don't even know who's gonna fall for that. I mean, that's just weird. Because
that one's way over the top.
Yeah, most people, they're going to fill a 120 gig iPod with music, have pirated it all anyway.
Yep, there you go. And if you look at how much money it costs to fill a Zune with music that you're purchasing, how much does the biggest Zune hold? We should call the guy that has one.
I think okay, no, that's just funny.
I'm on a roll tonight.
I'm pretty sure they have 120 gig Zooms, just like, 120. So the same size, basically, is what Apple's packing.
All right, so it costs the same thing to fill a Zune that it does to fill an
But
iPod.
It doesn't if you're doing subscription planning, pricing.
Okay, so...
See, here's what I really think. That... whether or not this is their intent, Apple has got the buying market so locked up that they're wanting to fight it out with Napster and Rhapsody, or Real Networks, for that small segment of the marketplace that is interested in renting their music.
Okay, I can see that. And that there's... I was going to say there's plenty of market for them to fight over, but there's really not. There's not that many people... comparatively, that seem to be doing the subscription music services.
Napster's new, bottom feeding pricing of the $5 for the streaming service.
Yeah, so they're going for the same marketing or business strategies that Dell went for, which is go as absolutely low as you can.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, I really don't get it. I mean, and don't mistake me. There is a market for music rental systems. It's just, it is so far small, and I hope that it remains small. I am one of those people. I want to own the music that I've got.
You know, I'm in the same camp that you are. I like owning my music, and I like having that knowledge that I have music right now that I may not listen to for a year or so. Mm-hmm, but sure. When I want to listen to it, it's there for me immediately. And I don't have to go re-download it. I don't have to worry about whether or not I paid an extra fee so that I could still have that music. It's just there for me.
Right. Right. Yep. That's how I am. And, so let's look at Napster, because their whole thing... I mean, that math is really, it's weird to me, because like I said, they're basically saying that, our service is worth a nickel, because, you can get four songs for $4.95, or for $5, you can get the same songs in the streaming service. I mean, what better way to say that their product isn't worth a damn thing?
Oh, it's worth something. A nickel.
Well, that's true, yeah.
There you go. You know... even beyond the pricing structure, which you write says our product has no value. The big thing that worries me about a subscription service, if I was inclined to try one out, is that I'm not sure that any of them would be around long enough for it to be worth my while to invest in their system. And Napster, I mean, they've kind of done the come and go thing along the way. Then there have been several other subscription services that have appeared and disappeared. Microsoft has even done their part to kill music subscription services that are based on their own technologies.
Right.
I just don't see a stable market for music subscriptions. And until that becomes a stable market, I'm not inclined to even consider trying one out.
Right. I'm going to try to set this joke up a little bit better. Best thing about Napster was the joke in the Italian Job where Seth Green says that the dude stole it from him because he was taking a nap.
You know,
what's the kid's name that did Napster?
See, now all I can think is Seth, and that's wrong.
Yeah, that's Napster inventor. Google is our friend.
It is.
Sean Fanning.
There we go.
Yeah, Sean Fanning in the Italian Job. Because he actually did a little cameo there. Anyway, be that as it may. All right, so let me actually take a devil's advocate position, and I want you to hammer me on this if you should. You know, one of my things that I say a lot is that I hate how expensive digital downloads are.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that I want digital downloads to be 50 cents or maybe a quarter, maybe even a dime, and that there is a lot of profit margin to be made from that, and that the music market would likely grow and perhaps become important to people again. And I don't really think it is all that important these days to most people. Is not what Napster is doing. Are they not actually getting closer to that model by making their own product and devaluing their own product and telling the world that it's not worth anything? Is that not what I'm advocating to?
No, that's not what you're advocating.
Why?
What you are advocating is a quality music service that charges a fair price for the songs that it sells or rents to you. What Napster's advocating is the bottom feeding market. Let's just draw people in with what we can, and what I think they're hoping is that they can provide a product that's worth what you're paying, in this case, a nickel, and that they'll be able to draw in enough people to be able to just stay afloat. And of course, for everyone that's sitting there doing the math, when we say a nickel, that's in comparison to if you were to buy four songs at the iTunes store and then five songs at the iTunes store, and then the nickel that's left over, that's what's going to the subscription part of the service.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, no, what you're advocating is not the same thing that Napster is doing.
I don't really think it is, at least certainly it is not ostensibly. I think that I would like to think I'm not being a hypocrite on this particular issue, but maybe what Napster is doing is really where I want to see things go. I'm not really sure. I know that a buck a song is highway robbery, especially since the labels are the ones making all that money, and the artists aren't.
Right.
Yeah, I guarantee you, by the way, I would be stoked, and not just because we're such a small band, but if our band could sell full albums for $2.99 online, we would make a killing on that. Just a killing on that. There's no anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
Getting off tangent.
Well, not really, because this is all about the whole music service or the music industry and how the pricing structures and the business models are totally whacked. And so at one end, we have the market dominant online music service, which is the iTunes Store. And then now at apparently the polar opposite end, we have Napster, which is offering a subscription service that costs a third of what Microsoft's Zune Pass costs.
I think there are a couple of differences, though. I think you can only stream it online. I don't think you can pack a uh, pack a pack a player with stuff for that price.
All right. And yeah. Okay. So now I have this vision of people walking down the streets with their laptops with like a Sprint EVDO card in them, and they're holding the laptops up to their head like boom boxes from the 80s so that they can listen to their music.
That's lovely imagery. That's lovely imagery. You know, speaking of lovely imagery, seems like it's a good spot to talk about our sponsor this week, good folks over at audible.com.
Yes, I'd have to agree. This is exactly the right place to stop and do that. And I've actually done my homework and picked out a book that I would love to mention to everyone.
Oh, do tell, please.
All right. Breakfast of Champions from one of my favorite authors of all time, Kurt Vonnegut
Bruce Jenner?
Jr. Yes, Bruce Jenner.
Oops, dating myself.
Well, you know what they say about dating yourself? It's a sure thing.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point, man. We're off to a bad start on this one. All right, so we have Breakfast of Champions, which is properly by Kurt Vonnegut, and I also had time to do homework, following your homework, I guess. But this is the unabridged version that Audible.com is offering for $17.95, but our readers can actually get it for free.
Yes, they can. And all they have to do is go to that magical URL that we have just for them.
Just for them.
Yes. And when you go to this magical URL, you can sign up for, what is it, a free two-week trial period? And at the end of that two-week period, you get to keep the book that you've downloaded.
You get to keep the book that you downloaded. And, you know, why don't you actually tell folks about Breakfast of Champions and why you like it?
Okay. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Breakfast of Champions or with Kurt Vonnegut, this is a wonderful book about America, about people in general, from the perspective that only Kurt Vonnegut can offer. And it's narrated by Stanley Tucci, who has just an absolutely fantastic voice and, in my opinion, totally gets what Kurt Vonnegut was trying to do with this book. And so he can emote the story in a way that just feels as natural as the book does. He does a fantastic job of bringing this book to life.
Well, with that in mind, why don't we actually play a clip, and why don't you set up the clip for us?
All right, so the clip we're about to hear actually comes from the introduction to the book, which is as wonderfully fascinating as the rest of the book is. And so we're going to hear a little clip where Kurt Vonnegut Jr. is talking about one of the main characters in the story, Kilgore Trout, who, by no small coincidence, is an author.
I tend to think of human beings as huge rubbery test tubes, too, with chemical reactions seething inside. When I was a boy, I saw a lot of people with goiters. So did Dwayne Hoover, the Pontiac dealer who was the hero of this book. Those unhappy earthlings had such swollen thyroid glands that they seemed to have zucchini squash growing from their throats. All they had to do in order to have ordinary lives, it turned out, was to consume less than 1/1,000,000th of an ounce of iodine every day.
And, like you said, it seems like the narrator gets it. He doesn't sound a darn thing like Kurt Vonnegut, but he kind of sounds like what I think Kurt Vonnegut's character sounds like. And I guess that's the key. Yeah.
Yes, I would have to agree. It just has a natural Vonnegut feel, the way that Stanley Tucci reads this.
Mm. All right. Well, that's great, man. Breakfast of Champions. Kurt Vonnegut, that's our recommendation for our sponsor this week at audible.com. And so if readers go to audiblepodcast.com/appleweekly, they get the details on the special offer that can result in a free book if they so choose. Actually, not if they so choose. They get a free book. And our recommendation this week would be Breakfast of Champions by Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah, and circle the day on the calendar, because I just went all highbrow on you guys, and I usually don't let the literature side of me sneak out and tarnish my my drunken reputation.
That's okay. I'll bring us back next week. I'll bring us back down to some science fiction or fantasy.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, get back down to my level.
I like your level.
Okay. And how about Steve Jobs?
you know, the
what do you think of that psychic? What do you think about him not being at the WWDC?
Okay, Steve Jobs not being at the WWDC. Well, I would love to see him there. I'm not surprised he won't be there, because that would mean that he'd be coming back a few weeks earlier than what Apple has been saying and what he implied in his open letter to employees.
He didn't even imply it. He just said it. And I have zero doubt that he was very well aware of exactly what 6 months meant.
Oh, yeah. And I'm certain that he was well aware of the window that WWDC would likely fall in.
That's what I meant.
Okay. So there we go. We're on the same page with that. So it's no surprise to me that when Apple announced who was going to be giving the keynote presentation at the developers conference, that the name that they tossed out to us was Phil Schiller and not Steve Jobs.
Of course. I mean, but you and I were definitely sort of hoping that Steve would be there. It seemed like it would be a perfect time for him to come back early and blah, blah, blah. But in reality, you know, now that Apple's made the announcement and we have the hindsight glasses on, I mean, you know, duh. Of course Steve isn't going to do the keynote. He won't be there. There's just no way. He shouldn't be there. If he's not healthy, he shouldn't be there. You know, if he's still taking his 6 months. But now Apple did recently iterate that he was on a 6 month leave of absence. That was about, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Right.
So it doesn't seem likely that it's going to be too much longer after that, but he's definitely not going to be at the keynote. And keep in mind, too, I think this is really important, Jeff. Apple could have delayed the WWDC until July or August if they wanted to.
Oh, sure.
God knows they have in the past, because they were waiting for development of operating systems and such.
Yes, they could have. But I think that they didn't see a need to. And the benefits of doing WWDC at the beginning of June far outweigh the benefits of holding it until Steve Jobs can come on stage. And that's because Apple has to make sure that they have all the developers lined up and ready to go to write iPhone 3.0 applications, because we have new devices like the Palm Pre coming out, which, well, I hope the Palm Pre does well, but I'm not going to hold my breath for that. Apple still needs to be prepared for these new devices, and they need to proactively go out there and keep their market.
Okay, so first of all, I hope the Palm Pre does well, just because I want Apple to have competition to keep Apple on its toes.
Right, and that's why I want the Palm Pre to do well, too.
Right, yes. Right. Secondly, I agree with you. I think that the iPhone is what is driving the timetable here, but I don't know that we can overlook the fact that this is an opportunity for Apple to once again demonstrate that they function with or without Steve.
Sure. And they've been showing that since Macworld Expo in January. Mm-hmm. And they gave Phil Schiller a baptism by fire. I think Phil did a great job with his keynote presentation at Macworld Expo. And I think that Apple threw him a crap hand.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he did not have anything that compelling to talk about at the event, but he still did a really good job.
The things that he talked about, he did just a fine job of talking about. And, you know, we talked a little bit about that before. You know, we saw Phil the front man as opposed to Phil the sidekick, and I think he did just fine.
I think he did too. And a lot of people probably don't realize just what that means when I'm saying Phil Schiller did a good job, because I'm the guy that you remember when the iBook was introduced and Steve had Phil Schiller climb up on a gantry and jump off the top of it into the airbag
to demonstrate the accelerometer.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. When he hit the airbag and climbed out, without realizing I was saying it, I announced to everyone else that I was watching the presentation with, "Oh, the airbag worked."
Man, why do people hate on Phil? I like Phil.
You know, I like Phil now. I didn't because I don't know. He felt like kind of a whiny puppy dog following along, me too kind of guy.
And it's because we were seeing Phil the sidekick.
That's it exactly. I don't like Phil the sidekick. Phil, okay, the front enough. Man, I like.
Well, and Phil the executive, I like. And I don't think it can be. It would be crazy to argue that he doesn't do a great job because Apple's marketing is great.
I have to agree with you completely. But I needed to point out to people just what it really means when I say Phil did a good job.
Fair enough. Absolutely fair enough. Yeah. So, all right. So, Jobs not being there, duh. I'm guessing, you know, a couple of analysts, I think it was Ben Reitzes that was talking about maybe expecting Apple, or it might have been Gene, talking about Apple waiting until July, waiting until Steve comes back to deliver the iPod Supertouch or, you know, whatever it is that they're going to call their solution for the netbook market.
You know, that's a possibility. They aren't going to hold the iPhone for a Steve rollout, I don't think. But timing works out for Steve Jobs to walk out at a press event and say, look at this. We have the eloquently dubbed iPod Supertouch. Okay, great. But it's not necessary.
It's not necessary. It would, of course, be a big punch. I would actually argue that they could keep the new iPhone until July if they wanted and kept the focus on iPhone 3.0 at the developer conference.
You know, all right, so just to be clear, I'm not expecting Apple to introduce the next generation iPhone at WWDC. They may announce it. They may not even do that. But I'm not expecting developers to be able to reach under their chair and pull out a brand new iPhone to take home. And I certainly don't expect anyone, at least any of the journalists that we get to rub elbows with, to have one in hand in June either.
Probably not, but I don't know. It could happen. It could happen. I don't know. And they may or may not hold this device, this, you know, iPod Supertouch Extreme for Steve, or, you know, maybe not. I don't know. It's going to be interesting one way or another. It's going to kind of be interesting to see just what they go ahead and show us at this event. Because it really does, unless he's not looking good, it really does make a lot of sense for Apple to mark Steve's return with some kind of product announcement. It just seems appropriate. It's what he does it better than everybody.
He does. Now, if he does that, he may also be setting a new precedent, which is I'm back and I'm going to do all the announcements. Is that something he wants to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe not.
We've already started this transition into other people doing the presentations. Why mess that up?
Right.
So
yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
So what do you think of the psychic?
Okay, when I found out about the psychic thing, I Brian, how often do stories this ludicrous just land in our laps?
Not very often. We should thank our friend Leander Conti for putting it together.
Yeah, that was absolutely fantastic of him, and what a brilliant move. To me, what it showed was that this whole thing with the rumor mill was getting so out of control that we might as well bring in the psychics too.
Oh yeah,
which is exactly why I wanted to cover it at TMO, because it really is that ridiculous.
Well, the thing I find the most fascinating about it is that her predictions are all very, very safe, but they're actually not. They're not. I mean, you know, either she's a real psychic, which, you know, take that or leave it as you wish, or she understands Apple and Steve's role at Apple because her you know, visions, predictions, whatever, are just very, very, very safe.
You know, if I were to claim I was psychic, and if I were to have a crystal ball, and by the way, did you like the crystal ball graphic I made for that article?
I did.
I just loved it with the apple in it and everything. All right. Anyhow,
I like all your new badges that you've made. They look great.
Oh, thanks.
People will be seeing them soon.
They will. Yeah, actually, they'll be seeing them very soon. Yeah.
I also enjoyed your upside down apple that we used for the Australian Apple store.
Oh, yeah, the Australia Apple. Uh-huh. Yep.
We wanted them to feel at home.
Yeah, well, there you go. And yeah, we cater to everyone. Uh-huh. All right. Okay. So anyhow, if I were to have my own crystal ball, uh-huh, to claim I was psychic, uh-huh, as a psychic, what I would predict for Apple is that Steve Jobs would not be making an appearance at the developers conference. The earliest we might see him back at Apple in a more regular capacity would be the end of June, but he might wait just a little bit longer. My magic eight ball is cloudy on that. And that he will have a changing role over the next couple years at the company. And then after that, he would probably start looking at what he wants to do with the rest of his life. And that may take him away from his focus on Apple.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah. Very, very safe predictions. And so, I don't know. We'll be watching it in two and a half years. We'll see. If he actually leaves in 2 years, we'll have to reference her having said this.
You know, if he doesn't leave in 2 years, we'll have to reference her saying this. So we need to set up an iCal event so that, yes, we know in 2 years from now to revisit this story.
Make it so.
You know, it just wouldn't have felt right if we hadn't had at least one Star Trek reference tonight.
I'm so enjoying the Blu-ray stuff, man.
I have no doubt. What
did you think? The new movie. Did you see the new movie?
I did, and I loved it.
Yeah, it was good. I forgive J.J. Abrams for season two of Lost and for season three of Alias. Although, someone just stopped me. Okay, here's a spoiler, folks. This is a spoiler, right? So you can just stop the podcast right now or skip over a bit because we're going to have a little spoiler. Do you watch The Fringe?
No, I have not watched The Fringe.
I don't watch it mainly because I think it's an ungodly bad show based on the episode and a half that I did watch.
Okay.
All right. So someone stopped me, asked me about Star Trek. I mentioned that I was no J.J. Abrams fan, but that I love Star Trek and that it was just fantastic. And then she started talking to me about The Fringe. And she talked to me about how at the very last episode of The Fringe,
mm-hmm,
Nimoy is apparently, Leonard Nimoy is a character that's basically introduced in the final seconds of the show, and she's in an alternate timeline.
Huh.
Now, where have you seen that recently?
Oh wait. It's right on the tip of my tongue.
Star fucking Trek. Oh, yeah. Did I say that? I'm gonna say that again. Star fracking Trek.
Yeah. Oh my god, that was the most eloquent blending of Trek and Galactica.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. See, I mean, when I heard that, this was today. I heard that, and I'm like, you know what? I'm back to being pissed off about Alias season three.
There you go.
It's like he just, you know, he can't kill off any characters, and he just recycles stuff all the time, man. What the hell?
Yeah, well.
All right, so that's the end of our spoilers. No more spoilers.
Okay, so spoiler alert is over. Now back to the general comments. Yeah, I really liked the new Star Trek. I think that it will revitalize the franchise in a positive way, and I really am looking forward to seeing the next movie. I'm assuming there will be a sequel. Next movie in the new Star Trek series, and if it was okay for me to line up now, I would. My biggest disappointment was that I went to see it on the new IMAX screen at the Westminster Promenade, which is fairly close to where I live. And it turns out it's not a real IMAX screen. It's just one of those screens that's been licensed as IMAX.
Ooh, nasty. Yeah. And oh, that's someone made a bad decision to allow that to happen.
Well,
that's bad marketing. Bad
IMAX is allowing that to happen. And
that's
and
what I mean.
Yeah, so I was disappointed with that. However, it was a digital print. The sound system was fantastic. And since it was recently renovated, it was new seats. So it was nice. But I was expecting a full IMAX experience. And I'm going to have to go down to Dave & Buster's in Denver, where the only commercial IMAX theater in Colorado happens to be, so that I can see it again. Oh, drat. I have to go see Star Trek again.
My wife and I wanted to see it again on IMAX too, so I don't know, maybe we'll just go to Denver instead.
Great. Just let me know when you're going to be here, and I'll pick you up at the airport, and we'll head on over.
Yeah, probably at about 5 till never is what I'm thinking on so many different levels, but whatever.
All right, I'll just I'll pencil it into iCal then.
There you go, pencil it in. Yes. That would be a great plugin, by the way.
Oh, my God, and you could do it too. Well, I couldn't.
Well, I couldn't either, but someone could.
Someone could, yeah.
Yeah. All right, any developers out there, let us know. We have a patent on this idea, and we will sue you if you don't include us. Just kidding.
I love
pencil
capitalism.
In. Make it so that we can use it and release it for free. I love the idea of having the pencil in option for iCal. I love that.
Yes, I would totally love that. All right, so whenever Mr. or Mrs. Developer, you get this underway, let us know. I will be happy to beta test for you.
Yes, and we'll tell people about it.
Oh, you know we will.
Yep. So please do it for us. And with that, take us out, man.
Okay. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. That's macobserver.com, not awr.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at tmobrian. That's twitter.com/tmobrian. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is by Cashfly, provided by Cashfly even. The bass was recorded by Boom just for us, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.